Welcome to the Where Do Gays Retire podcast, where we help you in the LGBTQ plus community find a safe and affordable retirement place. Join Mark Goldstein as he interviews others who live in gay-friendly places around the globe. Learn about the climate, cost of living, healthcare, crime and safety, and more. Now, here's your host, Mark Goldstein.
Today, we journey to Torremolinos, Spain, with our guest, Richard Jasicki. And I'll tell you a little bit about Richard. Richard is 63 years young, retired at the age of 62. Congratulations. Married to Charles Noldret since it was legal to do so in 2014. They have been together for 22 years. Oh my goodness, that's a long time. And that's about 122 years in gay years. That's very funny. And it's very true too. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
And he was born on a US Air Force base in the UK to an English mom from London and an American dad from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. At the ripe age of 6 months, they moved to Madison, Wisconsin, where his dad was stationed at the local US Air Force base. When in the UK, then when Obama was elected as president, he figured it was time to return to his childhood roots and continue his career as a freelancer based in San Diego, but typically working away from home on the West Coast. He sponsored his partner for a green card as soon as it was legal to marry and did so. That took over 18 months and over $2,000 to get it done. Happy to compare the process he is going through now in Spain, and kind of like the tables have been turned. So he brought his husband over to the U.S. because he was a U.S. citizen. And now his husband, who is a U.K., an Irish citizen, is bringing him over, has brought him over to Spain. So they love the great outdoors, love hiking. So Richard, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it. I am very looking forward to talking to you about Torremolinos.
Hi, Mark. Hi, everyone. Yeah, I'm delighted to help out in any way we can. So
thank you. Thank you. So, Rich, tell our audience where you moved from. You mentioned San Diego, right? And why you decided to choose Torremolinos as the place you would like to live and retire.
Yeah. So we were in California, San Diego for about a dozen years or so. We had a very good life there. We had a big house with a pool and a hot tub and everything, very close to Cowles Mountain, if anybody knows San Diego. Great outdoors. But, you know, as the clock ticks and you get that bit older and suddenly you get into your 60s, you start to think, where are we going to end up? And for us, given I'd spent some time in Europe anyway, with an English mom, an American dad, and my husband was British and Irish, I don't know. I think we felt that we wanted to experience history, culture, good wine, good food, museums, let's say some chateaus. But I had this sort of vision in my head of just us sitting in a small town plaza somewhere, a little table with a bottle of wine and a couple of glasses and eating a little bit of French food or Spanish or Italian or Swiss. You know, that sort of gentle life, but still culturally rich. So that pulled us towards Europe. The challenge was where in Europe to go.
Europe is huge.
It's as a continent, it's not physically that huge, but it's very culturally diverse. And,
right.
You know, so we've had friends who previously done it. We listened to a number of the Where Do Gays Retire podcasts, which were extremely helpful in guiding us and giving us that little bit of extra insight from real people on the ground. All right. We love France, but for some reason, I just don't think we'd ever felt we'd be able to learn and speak French as well as the French do. I visited Madrid many years ago, and we've been to Barcelona a couple of times on vacations. And we always found the Spanish folks to be very accommodating in their approach to expatriates, very welcoming. You don't have to speak Spanish perfectly. They will meet you halfway, or they'll just speak to you in English usually. You know, so it, we felt it would be for us a good place to at least try. So, right, and then in terms of why did we pick Torremolinos? And so that was how we ended up with Spain. But why we picked Torremolinos specifically? Well,
I'm curious.
It's on a place called the Costa del Sol. So it's the Sun Coast. And we were moving from San Diego, California. And when you're living in America's finest city, everywhere else on the planet looks not as good. So I don't like to boast. But
no, you definitely have a point.
Yeah, I mean, San Diego. And so we figured, you know, we wanted the nice landscape with some mountains, a bit of desert, a bit of blue sea, you know, for the ocean breezes and things. And the Costa del Sol, and the key ingredient, sunshine, 300 plus days a year as well. That's absolutely critical. So
yes,
there we were. So we figured the Costa del Sol, and we did a little trial trip in February before we came out. We did a 3-week little visit, and we figured, yeah, it's as good a place as any. It's actually nice. So here we are.
So you're on the Costa del Sol, and why Torremolinos? Why not Malaga? Why not Benalmádena? Barola, if I said that right, for Fuengirola. Mijas, Sevilla. Why Torremolinos?
So, yes, so that's a great question. We did some research into the number of different expatriate citizens and communities here. We also looked at how many gay bars and things, gay businesses there were in different places. There are surely gay bars in Malaga. But Torremolinos is kind of like the gay capital of the Costa del Sol. There are, I don't know how many. I lost count of how many bars there are.
Right.
Basically. So it's by definition a very gay friendly place. But now that we're living here, I think we've discovered that the whole of Spain is extremely gay friendly, and we have no issues. If we go to Seville or anywhere, we could hold hands if we want. We don't usually, but we could. Nobody gives anything about what you do. So yeah, so we picked Torremolinos. It's, let's say, it's about 5 miles from the airport, Malaga. So we needed a good airport, because we plan to travel and fly, go back to the US, or maybe go visit Mexico again, or, you know, that type of thing. So, you know, and also good transportation. We don't want to be wedded to have a vehicle all the time. So Torremolinos seemed to be in that sweet spot, close enough to a big city, Malaga, and yet it has a nice small town feel as well, but it's extremely gay. So here we are.
I like it. It sounds good. I think you and I are a little, you know, I'm pretty much, me and my husband are looking for this kind of the same thing. So we'll get into that a little bit later. So tell us, geographically speaking, explain where Torremolinos is located, where the whole Costa del Sol is located in Spain.
Yeah. So if you could think of Spain in the Iberian Peninsula, that southwest peninsula of Europe, south of the Pyrenees, that its only border over in that direction is with France. So Spain, Madrid is in the middle. Take a line due south. On at the far bottom of Spain, you have Gibraltar, which is that British little enclave. But it's really the region in the far south of Spain is called Andalusia. And Andalusia is a large province of Spain, which once upon a time was ruled by Muslims, the Islamic religion and everything here. So you see vestiges, evidence of that in the palaces and things. So Andalusia, it's a large area. There are cities like Seville, Granada. Many people have heard of Granada and the Alhambra Palace there.
Yes,
and Malaga is the one big city which is on the coast. So we are facing Africa, but Africa's still about, I don't know, 7 or 80 miles away. At least we can't see it. Allegedly, you can see it if you go up a mountain. But so it's about as far south in Spain as you can get. In fact, I looked at a map the other day, and we are actually further south than Tunis in Tunisia. So, you know, we're way down, basically.
Yep. Okay. Tell us about the climate. Is it hot and humid in the summer? Does it have a rainy season? Does it get chilly in the winter?
Yeah, winter now, I guess, February, January. We've only been here for 5 months. We were here in February in 2022 for 3 weeks, and now we're here again February in 2023. We flew out here in September, beginning of September, so we've really seen the end of the summer season and through the winter, and now we are still in the winter, but let's just say if the sun is shining, it's always warm. If you're in the shade, it's just like California. It can be a little chilly. You take a jacket with you. In terms of rain and so forth, it rains from time to time, rarely for very long. I think this week there's 2 or 3 days where it might rain. Most weeks there's no rain at all. In the summer, I don't believe there's meant to be any rain whatsoever. It's one of these dry climates. Temperature-wise, in the winter, I think you're looking in US terms at sort of upper 50s, low 60s. So from San Diego's perspective, very similar in the winter.
Yeah.
At night, never freezing, never below about 40, I guess, 42, 43. But certainly chilly enough that you want to take a decent jacket if you're going to sit outside, and you'll have a patio heater. And it's an outdoor lifestyle, so you dress for that.
Yes, yes.
And then in the summer, it's hot, I believe. So instead of San Diego, think Phoenix, where you're from, Mark.
Yeah.
The temperatures are going to be up there, except we're right by the sea, the ocean.
Right, so you must get a little sea breeze.
Yeah.
Compared to Phoenix, where we're in a valley, so we just get this oven-like 110 degree, 115 degree.
Yeah.
Walking into a pizza oven hot. So
yeah.
I don't think it's as hot probably in Malaga, but
I'm sure
the summers may get into the 90s and 100 and maybe 100.
Yeah. But we love the
excellent
heat.
Yep, me too. I'm fine with that. I've done away with the cold. I moved away from the Northeast for a reason. The only time I want to see cold or feel cold or see snow is on a picture in Facebook. That's it.
I'm happy to watch it on TV.
Yes, yes, and see everybody freezing there.
I'm not going to be chiseling ice off the windshield ever again.
You and me both. You and me both. Okay. So does Torremolinos have a sizable expat community? Can you tell, have you met many expats? And let's talk about, is the expat, have you also met gay expats or LGBTQ expats as opposed to the mixed everybody expats?
Yeah. So the answer is yes and yes and yes. You know, 5 months into our journey, our life here, I didn't think we'd probably meet that many people. I thought we'd have to find a group on Facebook, put out a little message and say, hey guys, we've just moved here from the US. Does anybody, you know, want to meet for a beer? Or
right.
We're looking to meet people and say hi. We never had to do any of that. We, you know, this area of Spain is, its number one industry is tourism. And it is Europe's Sunshine Coast. So you'll find people living here from Scandinavia, a lot of people from the Netherlands and from other countries like Germany, UK, a lot of people from Ireland. There's more Irish bars here than I ever saw in any, you know, apart from in Ireland. So, yeah, so there's a big expatriate community. In terms of gay, yes, there are local people, but there are also a lot of people who, like us, have moved here for the lifestyle and the climate. And in terms of how we navigated meeting people, we were quite lucky. We were in an Irish bar. The bar was called the Irish Affair. It's set back off the street. We've walked by it many times, never seen it, but there's this little gate, and we walked up the gate, and there's a pub back there. And in the pub was some live music, very nice. And the owner of the pub, when we were buying drinks, the landlord of the pub, he sort of said, where are you from? And I said, well, we're from San Diego. We just literally moved here like a week and a half, 2 weeks ago from San Diego, California. And he said, oh, wait, I have something to show you. And he ran away. to the back of the bars, behind the stage, actually, where they have a singer singing, and yanked off the wall a life buoy from the USS San Diego, which was being refitted in Malaga, I think he said in the first Gulf War. But who knows? But I tried to look that up. That may not be the correct story. Anyway, he has this, and it's the USS San Diego. He showed it to us proudly, and we sort of, you know, had a picture taken with it. And he said, by the way, there's some Americans over in the other bar over there. I'm going to introduce you. So we went and met some other Americans immediately, Scott and Marianne, who moved New York to Florida to San Diego. And through them, we kind of like connected to a wider American expatriate community, with Brits as well, because the common language, so there are Brits as well, but mostly American. And this was, you know, suddenly somebody said, hey, we're all going to a restaurant for Thanksgiving. Would you like to come along? And we said, sure. So 45 Americans gather in a British restaurant that does turkey for Thanksgiving. So
that's great.
It was. And now there's a WhatsApp chat group we have on the cell phone, so you can put out and say, hey, does anybody want to go do this or that? You can take it or leave it. Nobody's expecting you to do anything at all.
Yeah.
But it's there if you need it. So
now I also know somebody that just opened up a Facebook group called Americans in Malaga. So that's pretty close by. So
yeah, it is. We've not met anybody resident in Malaga yet. Most people have been in Torremolinos or the smaller towns nearby, like Benalmádena or Fuengirola.
You met Steve.
But yes, we met another one of your podcast people, Steve Arenberg and his husband Sven. We're friends with them, not through this podcast. We met them through the Thanksgiving.
Wow.
So I would say it's a friendly place. Wherever we go, we talk to people. We have Dutch friends now. We have Spanish friends, a lot of American friends. And it's, as I say, you don't feel the need to sort of like be in each other's company all the time. It's like a random message. I messaged somebody earlier today and I said, hey, it was nice to see you 3 weeks ago. Do you want to meet up again at some point? And immediately, yes, let's do lunch. So,
That's great. And no matter where you move from, it could be from state to state within the states, or especially if you're moving to another country. To me, it's important to develop friendships and acquaintances to where you are. Community to me is a very important thing, especially moving to another country, I would say.
It is. I mean, if you only have to read the medical research that says that the number of personal connections you have and the depth of those connections makes you live longer. And for us, community is hugely important. It's all about valuing where you live. It's about enriching your life with other people's opinions, sometimes different, sometimes similar.
Yeah.
When you put yourself in the middle of people from all different backgrounds of different countries, it really is quite eye-opening. And it's exciting. There's an excitement to it.
There is, because it expands your view. You're not just the same person that you see all. You see such a diverse melting pot of different types of people everywhere, because everybody is from different places. So
That's correct. Really, and I think what's interesting is those same people from all these different countries, they've moved here as well. So they're open.
And they're looking for the same thing as you are.
Yeah.
Because you're all trying to find a better life and a better lifestyle for one another.
And surprisingly, they're not universally of retirement age, like me. And really, I still, for us, we're 63 now, and I use the term liberally, that we're now of retirement, when we have retired, therefore. But, you know, there are younger people as well, and it's don't think of it like coming and living with a bunch of old relics. It's not like that.
Right.
It's really, there are people of all ages, and I think we were surprised by how many different types of people there are here. gay and different countries and mm-hmm. all those things.
So it's not like God's waiting room.
No. Or Shady Pines.
Right. Shady Pines. With the Golden Girls.
I can still hear Dorothy shouting, yes. Shady Pines for you. But no, we right. have not moved into Shady Pines at all. It's interesting because culturally, it's very diverse. And yet, the culture of Spain is very vibrant and very strong. Spanish culture yes. is extremely yes. vibrant.
Yeah,
we may talk in a few minutes about how Spanish families work and what you see when you go out.
Yes, yes, exactly. We will. But before we get to that also, because Torremolinos is a resort town and it's touristic, do you find it transient? Do you find people coming and going, moving in, moving out?
We find it's mostly vacationers who are in Torremolinos for a few days to a week or two, and they're everywhere. You know, you'll see them in the gay bars, in cafes, and you just go with the flow. It's like they're mostly quite pleasant people, and you can chat with them, and they say, oh, yeah, how long are you here for? We're leaving on Tuesday or whatever. So, you know, I think being here through the winter is a good time to meet the more permanent people. So I'm glad we picked to come here like at the end of the tourist season and not the beginning, because in right. the beginning, I think you would just get a bit lost because you're just overwhelmed with transient people.
Yes, so. Yes. Yeah, it's a good idea to meet those that are a little bit more stable. Even expats could be transient somewhat. You know, they may not know where they yeah. want to be. But
interestingly enough, most of the people we have met are here for good.
That's good to
universally
know.
Say it was the best decision they've ever made in terms of where to live and how much they enjoy the life here. People are not really looking to go back or do anything different, you know.
Save me a spot.
Yeah. Well, hopefully you'll get yourself out here for a visit and
yep.
we'll see us all.
Can't wait.
Mm-hmm.
So is there a specific gayborhood, so to speak, in Torremolinos, or is pretty much everything gay?
Well, there is. It's called the Nogalera. So it's I don't know how to describe it, really. Let's just say when Torremolinos was first set up as a resort, I think it was like 1950s, 1960s in the last century. And there's a certain amount of brutalist architecture. You can see it in some of the blocks here and there, but La Nogalera, which is up in the town, away from the beach mostly, was an award-winning set of towers, architecture with, I guess it may have been retail or something originally underneath it, all at ground level, street level, but now it's all gay bars. So that whole district is like, it's almost like a feeling of being in a mall, a 1980s, 70s style mall with a lot of concrete, but there's gay bars everywhere.
Is it outdoor or indoor?
Was in and out. Every bar has an in and an out, pretty much. So we were out last night. Don't go out every night, far from it, but we sat outside, even though it's a little chilly, but we have jackets and things. And so, yeah, so that's the gayborhood as such. And those towers, we meet people who said, oh, yeah, I bought a condo up in Tower 3. And, like, you know, they
put oh, wow.
like that. I think for us, that's a little bit too, you know, there's a certain amount of noise comes with a gay nightclub with that rhythm.
Right,
the beat,
I don't want to.
Techno. You know, yes. We looked at a couple of condos when we moved here, and the realtors were busy saying, oh, yeah, this is where we looked. And so it's opposite a gay club. I think unless we come back at 2 in the morning, we're not going to take this condo.
Right.
So, but you asked about
that reverberating bass. You can hear that reverberating bass, right, going through your body. No.
And it goes through everything. I mean, there's very little will stop that deep boom, boom, boom. So. Right. But really, you asked about not all the gay bars are there. There are some further down the coast, like another kilometer. There's several. They're all over the place. And And I go back to what I said earlier, which is it's a very gay-friendly country. I mean, you can be gay anywhere you want. It's like, you don't feel you have to be in the hood. You know, you can be as gay as you want in any restaurant, anywhere. You know, the people love it. It's something to be celebrated. And I think that, you know, the one of the, we'll probably talk in a while about some of the factors that pulled us away from the US to look to Europe, but we feel the attitude here towards the gay community is extremely positive.
Extremely positive. That's
great. I don't see much negative.
That's great to know. Do you, would you recommend knowing, do you guys know Spanish, the language?
So you don't have to know Spanish. There's one of the first people I met here, a friend of mine from the UK said, oh, I have a cousin who lives near Fuengirola down the coast. And, you know, called it, and he said, I'll introduce you. We didn't know anyone at the time. So we went for lunch and we met, and she'd been here for 15 years. And we got to the menu where we were trying to order. And I already knew, because we've traveled to Mexico so many times, I kind of like know what various menu items are. And she had no clue. She didn't speak a word. I think she could do gracias and por favor.
Really?
That was about it. And she's
lived
here for
15 years?
Yes.
Wow. That's surprising.
So you don't have to learn the language. However, that's not our style at all. We are immersing ourselves in Spanish tutoring, and we, our objective is to try and understand and speak as local as possible, to be able to have discussions with native speakers in their own terms, in their own language. So
you have a private tutor?
We do. We have Elena. She is an author who's written a number of books, and we met her through our first American contact, Scott and Marianne. They introduced us to her when she was signing books at a book fair that we went to, literally 400 yards from where our condo is. And Elena teaches us, she's resident locally, probably about 2 miles away. But most of the time we do lessons through Skype, one-to-one. My husband, Charlie, he has his lessons and I have mine. And the reason for that is I probably have a natural aptitude for, and I've picked up a lot of Spanish over the years. So we're at different levels. She also has a psychologist background, which is extremely helpful, because sometimes when you're learning a language, you get a little wound up and the mind goes blank. And she suddenly said, meditation.
Well, that's good.
You know, so she kind of,
especially the older you get, the more it goes blank.
It does. So especially when she says, the Spanish teacher said, what did you do today in Spanish? And I'm thinking, I have no clue. You know, I got up.
Right. Exactly.
Me levanto a 7 horas or something like that.
Yep.
So yes,
at
I don't.
7 o'clock.
Exactly. So she's very sweet. And then once a month, usually we meet with her, typically at one of her family's restaurants. Her family brothers and things have different restaurants around the town and things. So we go and meet at one of those, and it's very nice. And you know, you might find babies and children with us and her extended family, grandparents, sort of mother, and all of those things. So
that's great.
The Spanish don't come as an individual. They come as a family, and the family includes everyone. You know,
right. I think that's a good segue into the Spanish family.
There's no shady pines needed here. The relatives look after each other. The younger generations, you see it out in every beach cafe, it's typically, especially on a Sunday, but it could be any day of the week. You'll see people of all ages around the table with the baby buggy and the, you know, everything. It's just all there. You know.
All the generations.
All
the family.
And they're very respectful. It's beautiful to see.
And this is why I understand that there's less of a homeless issue there because of the family unit, and the people that are part of the family usually take care of one another. and they don't want to see their family out on the street. So they'll do whatever they can to keep that family unit intact.
It's visibly very strong. You can see the bonds from the grandparents through the grandchildren through brothers, sisters, uncles, aunts, cousins. A typical group might be 15 people. You know, it's not a table for six. It's a lot of people all
table and they, for 15.
And here's the other thing. This is typical of Spain. The lunch begins around 1:30 to 2 o'clock, and it'll last until 5:30. They take time. Nothing happens quickly. They eat like tapas and drink a little wine, and it just goes on and on. It's really very comfortable like that.
Yeah, and it is. It's true, and yeah, I think it's refreshing to see that family unit type thing, because you don't really see that here in the States.
No, you know, UK. It's the US and the UK are almost the same. It's like there are lots of Shady Pineses in both countries.
Yep. And do you think that making friends with a local, with a Spaniard, is more difficult because their friendship revolves around their family and the people that they've kind of grown up through during school, and that closeness? Do you find that at all?
Not really. I wouldn't assume that. Not the expert yet. We've only been here 5 months, but what we found is their relationships with their families are very strong and solid. And yes, they're out with their family, but when we've been out with Spanish people, they might have a brother and a nephew and a baby. So, and people sort of drop in and they're all, and you're just included is the way to describe it. You're not excluded or not a part.
Nice.
So in some ways, it's a very welcoming thing to have Spanish people in your life because they do. We've met the mothers and, you know, our Spanish teacher's mother. I mean, where else in the world would you do that?
Right. Nowhere. Not at least here in the U.S. So tell us about the local economy. Can you provide us examples? So currently, is your housing situation, are you renting an apartment or a condo?
Yes. We rent an apartment in a district called Playa Mar. You can find it on a map, Playamar. And it's a large gated community with a number of towers, all built at the same time, but it sits in manicured grounds. It's very beautiful. Landscaping is lovely, giant swimming pools, tennis courts. And there's two restaurants even in here.
You know. Wow.
So it's a really beautiful location, and we took a long time to find somewhere to live. I would say longer than I thought. When we moved here, we just rented an Airbnb for, I think, 4 weeks or something, and we assumed we'd find somewhere pretty easily. But I guess with the economy here being very tourist-related, the local people who own properties, apartments, they rent them out in the summer to tourists, and they do it week by week, and they make a lot more money doing that than they would do if they were doing it month by month or all year. So if condos do come up, apartments do come up for rent, we just had to wait a little bit longer, but we lucked out and found a nice place with a view of the ocean.
Beautiful.
Two people who were relocating, Spanish people, who were relocating in the opposite direction. They now, our landlord and landlady, now live in Orange County, California.
So, oh my God, that's so funny.
It is. You know, so I was able to tell them before they went where they can go and buy Spanish food items like chorizo sausage and things like that.
That's hysterical.
And paella rice, which is a different type of rice. But
right.
You know, and we're in touch still. We have their WhatsApp face, you know, message and so forth. So it's, yeah. So we we did luck out. We found a really nice apartment, two bedrooms, two bathrooms. It's not small, but it's not huge. And we pay, I think it's 1,500 euros a month. So what that includes is everything except trash and internet. So heat, electric is in, it's all electric anyway. So air conditioning and heat is all included.
Included? So, that's pretty good. Plus you have swimming pools, you said?
Yeah. They're not open in winter.
Amenities?
Yeah.
Other amenities?
So there's swimming pools, tennis courts, some kind of racquetball type thing as well. We've not really explored much of. There's even a mini golf thing, crazy golf layout, which I think you need to bring your own clubs and balls, but it's sort of there. I can see it. A lot of, and there's like children's facilities and things as well. So, yeah, two restaurants.
And Playa implies to me that it's close to the beach.
We are 200 yards from the beach, 300 yards.
That's so great. It, and you know, when the waves, you have a sea view?
We do. The whole of the front of the condo is glass, and we see the Mediterranean every time we get up in the morning. It's, we just love the view. Can't take my eyes off. Even in San Diego, we never had a view of the ocean. I mean, to pay for an ocean view in San Diego.
You're talking big bucks.
It would, you know, but we did have a beautiful view. But nevertheless, this is the first time I've lived with an ocean view, and we absolutely adore it. And the other thing, we're close enough so that the other day there was some high waves. There was a weather alert. And it said, you know, strong winds, high waves. And we heard it all night. Bam, bam, bam with the waves. I love it.
Yeah.
I sleep very peacefully.
Oh, yeah. That would put me to sleep.
Yeah, it does.
Oh, it sounds wonderful. Wonderful. So, okay. Is everything close to your condo? So can you walk to the market? Mercado, can you walk to the bank? Can you walk to the to doctor's offices, pharmacies, so on and so forth?
Yes, yes, and yes. So here's how American we were when we, you know, when we were leaving San Diego and we're moving to Europe and to Spain. I figured, you know, we better rent a car for a month. So, you know, I just don't, I was still in the American mode where you don't feel whole.
Of course.
Unless you have those four wheels and a steering wheel there outside the house.
Right.
So we sold our two cars in the US, our Subaru Outback and the Altima. And so we had to rent a car. And we got here and we rented it. We drove a little bit, but it basically sat in the parking bay for the whole month, more or less, because we realized we weren't living here at the time. We were living further down the coast, but there was a little supermarket within 300 yards. So if we, that was, so we don't have a car now. We don't, we need a car. We'll rent one for a few days because some of the hiking, we want to go to the mountains, then we need a car, you know?
Right. It's a big expense.
Otherwise, from the condo here, between us and the ocean is a very nice Spanish supermarket called the Mercadona. And they have all the fresh hams hanging up on the sea, on the, you know, on the hooks that you'll see in a typical Spanish place. They have a seafood counter where everything is fresh, all on ice. I've taken pictures and put them on Facebook, and people are like, oh my Lord, it's like everything. And the everything, the produce is deliciously fresh. The chickens, they taste, you really taste the food. It's, there's no hormones or anything. It's very good quality. That's one direction. There's another little supermarket in the other direction. There are bars, cafes, literally within a short walk and every, there are pharmacists. We have not had to go to the doctor yet. I don't, but we will, but they're all over the place as well. And we can walk everywhere. However, there are buses as well. If you want, we're served by two bus routes. The buses are clean, well patronized. We were told to get a little bus credit card thing, which is like a charge up card. You can put value on it. The bus ticket is like 50-60 cents. You know, it's nothing.
Wow.
And then the trains, 15-minute walk away, will get us to Malaga and so forth. And those trains, well, for us, they're free. So we just climb on the train and jump to Malaga or Fuengirola. Or we've been going lately. We've been to Seville twice because it's such an awesome city. I mean, really awesome.
I want to visit. Yeah.
And we met the Spanish government as part of their decarbonizing plan is trying to make public transportation more accessible. Mm-hmm. So they have a scheme whereby you can pay a deposit. Like if the local trains, we pay 10 euros for 4 months travel. If we make 16 trips, in other words, if we use it regularly, we get the 10 euros back. That's how it works. And for Seville, that's what's called a medium distance. And for that, you have to pay 20 euros up front. And then if you make 16 journeys, so each trip will be two journeys. If you make 16 of those, you'll get the 20 euros back. Except, you know, Seville's 100 kilometers, 100 miles away probably. So we're not doing that. We'll just lose the 20 euros. But, I mean, it's damn good value. Very, very
good. Oh, yes. Yes. And also, I understand now you can take it. You can go to Malaga, take a high-speed rail to Granada.
Yes,
in about an hour.
You can
and be there in a little bit over an hour. Which
to
those
high-speed trains, you pay for those. But I looked at the pricing the other day. It really is not that bad. It's like I think 40 euros, 45 euros round trip, maybe something like that. 23 each way, I think. Don't quote me on it, but there's an online app and everything. And the app's in English if you want. You just pick English. So you're in Spain. Everybody speaks Spanish. But no, you just pick whatever language you want. So yeah, go to Granada by train.
Our friend Kevin told us that you can make that into a day trip.
Yeah.
Granada.
I think we drove there in the first month we were here because we had rented the car. But of course, the last thing you want in Granada is a car when you're there. There's narrow streets,
right.
And you know, you really do not need a car in most Spanish cities.
Yeah. Yeah, we would definitely, if we were ever to move there, we would not. We would give up the car. We would save a whole lot on insurance.
Oh, correct. So we, you know, we had this vision for them with our American hats on, looking from your side of the pond over here, we got to have a car. We rented it for a month and we barely used it. And we've now had that kind of burned out of our systems. I think we feel unburdened now. We still feel as mobile, as easy to get around. Everything is clean and frequent. You know, they have Uber type services here as well. If you rev it, we've used it once or twice, but most of the time you're on public transportation.
And if you want to, you can rent it. You can rent a car for a day.
We've done that. We did, you know, so funnily enough, before Christmas, we had some Christmas shopping to do. We wanted to go to IKEA and buy some extra furniture, mm-hmm. bigger items. We just couldn't envisage getting those back on the bus. So,
right.
So we just rented a car for, I think it was 5 days for 100 euros, 110 euros, like that, with the insurance included.
Yeah.
Both drivers picked it up at the airport, and there we were. We had it for 5 days. We went, did some food shopping, picked up a turkey from an Irish butcher, you know, went to IKEA, that kind of thing. So, yeah, you can do it.
Life is good.
It's not bad. I can never realize how life-changing not having a vehicle really is. It's you know, the car thing. It's a money pit.
It is. Well, I, for one, I'm not a car person. So I was born and raised in New York.
Oh,
and
wow.
Many friends in New York had cars, but I, for one, didn't. So I kind of grew up the fact that I was a late bloomer when it came to my license. So I actually got my license, I don't remember if I was in my 40s or even 50s, but I got it while I was still in the New York area in Stamford, Connecticut. And then we moved to Florida because I needed it in Florida, because you definitely have to have a car. in Florida. So I still maintain my license. And here in Arizona, my husband normally does all the driving, but I would feel great to give up a car. It would not bother me in the least. So no. I would actually look forward to it. So tell us, so all of your utilities are basically included, including your air, and if you have heat at all, and if you use it at all, your water bill, your gas bill. So you pretty much $1,500 is, except for your internet and your trash. Phone and trash.
That's so here's it. The other. So let me just go through those costs because this is revealing. The trash is trivial. It's like $8.50 a month, I think. So we can just forget that. For that, you get trash. We just take it to the hallway. There's a little room and we put it all in. That's the waste. The recycling, all around the streets, they have recycling like every 400 yards. Big metal containers underground with chutes above ground with a little door on it. So like think of it like a laundry chute. You pull it back and throw your bottles and plastic. And they have all that for paper, plastic, and glass. But they also have really a very good one, which is for organic matter. So there's a picture of like fish bones and meat and eggs on the thing. And what you do is every supermarket, when you buy your produce, you bag it up at when you're picking the apples or greenery or whatever you want to pick. You put it in, and all those bags are compostable. So you simply put one of those bags, throw the banana skins and all of that kind of stuff. Potato peelings, throw it all in that bag. We keep it in the refrigerator in a bowl, in one of those bags with a closing on it.
So it doesn't stink.
And when we decide it's full enough, we just take it down and throw it down the organic waste chute.
these chutes are in the street?
They're like in the street, and you can imagine there's like some dumpster underground. So these are like metal things above ground, which have a laundry chute to the underground, basically. You pull the thing open. They're not near anybody's houses. They're on the side of the street. And it works really well. It's always really clean, and you can throw anything. Everything can go, pretty much.
That's genius.
And it is. Pretty great. I was surprised.
It's great for the environment.
San Diego didn't have any compost. You know, we had garden waste, but you couldn't do kitchen stuff. So that's on the recycling side. But the real one, the eye-opener for us, is the internet and cell phone. So we went to a little store in the gay area in La Nogalera. There's a place that advertises, we can do your internet for you. We went in there, and the guy there was a Brit. He spoke perfect English, obviously. And he said, well, yeah, we'll give you fiber. Get fiber to your condo, and that'll be 25 euros a month for 300 megabits. So we pay 25 euros a month for 300 megabits, which for us, that's enough to watch Netflix and whatever else we want to stream.
Right. Easy. Right.
It's fast.
$25.
€25. So euros. It's not quite one-to-one, but yeah.
Yeah.
And then he said, oh, by the way, you've got cell phones in your hands, and we'd already gone for prepaid SIM cards. And he said, no, get them on the same plan. Because if you have the 25 euro fiber plan with the company we've gone with, each cell phone is €6 a month. So our total internet and cell phone bill now is 30, whatever it is, 25 plus 12, 37 a month.
For both.
And for both phones. So we get 20 gigabytes of data included on the phone, right? When we're out of the house around.
Okay. So
we're not streaming movies when we're away from the home.
Right.
And we get 400 minutes per phone of international calling, unlimited national calling in Spain and Europe and stuff. So, yeah, I'm just amazed.
You said $33.
€37. All in.
€37 for everything. And I'm just trying to think of mine. I do have faster speed, so I have My internet is 1 gigabyte. So I'm currently paying, let's say, $110 per month for that. Then I have my phones, which I'm paying about another $110, $115 for two phones that are paid off.
Yeah.
If they weren't paid off, it would be double that.
Correct.
So we're already talking almost $250 a month there. And that's not including my streaming services that I pay for as well. So I pay for YouTube TV now. That's $70. And I have
We still have to, those streaming services and things are
you
not
still have to pay for
internet, but we have a solution for expats here, which, let's just say, you can get a lot of TV for not a lot of money, but people don't talk about it that much.
Yes, I understand.
I don't want to advertise.
No,
we get a lot of TV for not a lot of money, and it's very, very, and we can watch a lot of stuff. And I can even tune into San Diego and watch the local stations if I want. Believe it or not.
Cool.
Whenever I feel homesick, I can go and watch Days of Our Lives. Or
That's great.
Seriously, I can see the local weather forecast, for example.
I love it. And cost of living in itself, I'm sure eggs is not anywhere near $5.
It's like €2.
Two and change.
You tend to buy them in 6 egg packs, half dozens. So Spain.
Cheap.
Yeah, it's not, eggs are not that cheap. Spain has its own bird flu issues, I believe, where they're culling flocks of chickens, and therefore the eggs are challenged. But we don't eat many eggs ourselves, but yeah.
Yep.
Because you mentioned cost of living otherwise.
Yes, food and stuff like that.
Yeah, so let's start with the important things, the wine. All right. Spanish wine is world class, very, very fine wine. We started paying, I don't know, we were surprised at how good the wine was when we bought something for €7 or €8 a bottle. And then we realized that the French supermarket, the Carrefour, just around the corner from us, had a very nice own brand Rioja wine for $3.50 a bottle. So we felt really happy. And then we were out with Scott and Marianne one day and said, you pay as much as $3.50? Oh, no. Go to the Mercadona out, which is the supermarket the other way between us and the beach, $1.65.
Or a bottle.
Or a bottle of wine. And it's really, there is nothing wrong. It is not like box wine, it's, you know, cardboard. Oh, this is really good stuff. And you know, we're very comfortable with our choices. That said, when you go to a restaurant and you order wine or a bar or anything, it's typically, in most places, it's about €3 for a large glass of wine, which is inexpensive.
Last night I paid all right, first of all, I was at a restaurant. And we met a friend that we haven't seen in many years from New York. So we paid for dinner. Dinner was, it was close to $300. And the wine, a glass was, well, it depends if you wanted 6 ounce or 9 ounce. And me, of course, I'm going to have the 9 ounce. So the wine itself was, I believe it was $15 a glass. You could have bought a few bottles.
Indeed. I mean, I just give you a counter to that. I don't like playing one-upmanship, but...
Go ahead. Go ahead.
We were in Malaga on Friday, was it? Probably Friday, something like that. No, Thursday, I think, last week. And We pick somewhere to go for a nice hike, basically, and we wanted to go and look at some of the coast further on from us. Anyway, we did a nice walk around the beaches and everything, always very clean, very comfortable, very nice in the full sun. And as we came back towards the harbor, the port of Malaga, there's a lot of new development there. For they have a museum, I think it's the Malaga edition of the Pompidou Museum in France, and it's like multicolored, and there's a lot of restaurants all lined up outdoors, all facing the water. It's very, very nice location. Dozens of them. And we picked one that was, you know, nice and Spanish, and we picked a table in the sun with white cotton linen tablecloths and very nice. And we figured, oh, that'll be nice. It'll be pricey because we're going to pay for the view and all of that. So we had four large glasses of wine, and we had seafood soup, which was to die for. It was freshly made. I mean, it's just unbelievable flavor.
Yum.
Two of those. We had a giant salad full of pulpo, octopus, which was also
I love it.
And I think we just had some more tapas, like little potato croquettes and things like that. So it was just, it wasn't a huge meal, but we paid 55 euros for the two of us. Oh, we had a liter of San Pellegrino sparkling, you know, water as well. 55 euros. And that's in full view of sun,
of
harbor.
Of the sea. Yeah.
Premium.
Or the harbor.
The harbor. Premium location. Quite dressy. People were dressed up. Not us. We were in jeans and t-shirts and so forth. But nobody
cares. I would be. That's how I would be.
And it was just beautiful. It was, and the food was to die for. And here's the other thing. How much gratuity did you leave for your dinner?
Well, that was including gratuity. So we left 20%.
20%.
Yeah.
So here for that 55, we left, I think it was 2 euros, which is more than any Spanish would leave.
Right.
You know, the wait staff, they're paid reasonably well. Their health is included by the government and everything. So they're not scratching a living. You don't get better service over tipping.
And I bet you weren't rushed.
No.
We were rushed as soon as, are you finished with that? And this is typical. So you know how it is in the United States. You could have your fork in your mouth and taken away from your plate, and they're ready to take away the plate. And I'm like ready to chop off their hands. No, leave that there, you know? And they're rushing you out because they want to turn the table.
Correct. I mean, they bring you the check before you've even finished the meal. You know, you don't have to pay it right now, sir. But, you know, it's sitting there in front of you, glaring at you.
Right.
You know, and
they mean they want you to pay it now. Yeah.
Yeah. They want to turn the table.
Yeah.
In Spain, no, it's the opposite. There's no pressure. We have been to one or two places where we didn't have a reservation in Seville, and we wanted to eat in a what used to be Arabic baths, like Roman columns and arches underground, like a crypt, really beautiful, very high-end restaurant. We went down and we said, our hotel told us about this place. Would you have a table for two? And he said, oh yeah, we got one over there, but you have to finish your meal within 2.5 hours because we have a reservation on it.
Okay. 2.5 hours.
Otherwise,
that's
no, I know. Otherwise, you know, that place in Malaga, we could have sat there for another 2 hours if we wanted.
For the whole night.
Exactly. For the whole, well, lunch.
Right.
All through the afternoon.
Oh, yeah.
That's the big meal big here difference. Is lunch, by the way.
Yes.
It's, you know, that's when you sit down, take all the time, and, you know, through the afternoon.
Have your paella.
If you want. You wouldn't have that in the evening.
It's too heavy.
In fact, I've been to a local beach restaurant here, which is called a chiringuito. It simply means beach restaurant, and they're all very good. They serve steak or whatever you want, fresh fish, obviously, and paella. We tried to order paella, and they refused to bring it. They said, no, it's not good for you in the evening.
You don't do that in the evening.
Exactly. Can you imagine an American host saying, I don't think you need to order that, sir. It's too big for you. No.
And I'd be like, what the hell are you talking about? That's so funny.
It is funny.
That's hysterical.
It's just different. Very different.
So tell us, did you have to contact an immigration attorney when you came
over? So yes. That's a good one. We did. It's by no means mandatory. A lot of information is available online and you can do everything. But we were not comfortable with A, the language, and B, all of the little procedures and rules. You can do a Google Translate on any page, of, you know, and but it's not the same as, you know, a lawyer who will look out for you and just takes all that pressure away from you. So we did engage an attorney to propel our immigration. Charles got his very quickly because he's Irish. He has the right to live here, but you still have to go through the process.
Right.
Mine is just taking a bit longer because I'm American and British, but I don't have the right to live in Europe, but we're married. So we have everything we need. And the lawyer submitted the application online for us with all the right and had to arrange the translations. So we needed bank statements and things like that. And would you believe bank statements have to be translated? I'm looking at the lawyer saying, but they're just numbers.
That's what I heard.
You know, the number there says XXX. Where's the translation? Oh, no, no. It has to say the right terms, you know, whatever.
Right.
So, yeah.
So, okay, that's a good thing. How about taxes? Did you hire a tax attorney? You probably haven't filed tax yet, but
we have not. We did an exploratory visit back in February last year, literally the same time of year as now, and one of our big things was to make sure we found a tax CPA. We have one in California. All right. And we need one here. Our tax affairs are not simple. We have a property in the UK still. We have bank accounts in the US. We have different IRAs and it's just things all over the place.
Yeah.
So we actually asked in a different Irish bar, funnily enough, who files your taxes?
They told it's all us in an Irish bar.
It is. And they told us, they said, well, Jose Maria, blah, 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 go and see him. And we called them up and he said, yeah, come in. We'll see you for a free appointment. We'll tell you how it all works and everything. So we spent an hour with the guy, perfect English, typical tax accountant's office with piles of papers and everything everywhere. We were worried about the wealth tax here and inheritance taxes, things like that. We've saved our money very well. We don't waste it. So we have a bit to make sure we can live comfortably. And we didn't really want the government here to take any more than, you know, and that was part of the decision for us as to whether we're going to move here. So we asked the tax accountant, please explain. We laid out our assets and everything. He said, well, in the current system, you'll probably pay 2,000 or 3,000 a year euros based on all of your wealth and your income. You don't have much because you're retired, but you're pulling money out of IRAs and you'll be getting Social Security. That will be taxed. So we learned about it. Once we realized it wasn't a huge deal, we felt more comfortable with that. Since that time, Andalusia, the region of Spain here, has basically abolished wealth tax. And inheritance taxes they're not abolished, but they're now, you'd have to have.
It's like zero.
Yeah.
It's like zero. So, Rich, I want to commend you on that, too, because you're one of the first people that I've spoken with that has even moved to Spain that even looked into the tax situation. And I sit here in the U.S. thinking, well, what are my taxes going to look like? Do I have to pay income tax in the U.S. and then pay taxes, because whatever I'm reading, and then pay taxes in Spain, and the difference between the percentages is what I'll owe for Spanish tax, because Spanish tax is higher than US tax. So I need to know that stuff before I even take a look at Spain. And then I started looking at the wealth tax, and in certain autonomous communities in Spain, there is wealth tax. There is no longer wealth tax in Andalusia. The same thing I discovered for inheritance tax. And I contacted some tax attorneys and discovered that if I lived in Valencia or Alicante or other parts of Spain. If I passed away, my husband would be liable for this incredible amount of tax that the Spanish government would just take because it's based on worldwide assets. And I think to myself, I say, now there's so many expats from the United States living in Spain, and nobody talks about this. Do they not know? And you're the only person that I could honestly say that, just like me, has done their due diligence and learned what that's about.
You know, I was an IT guy, and then I ended up being an IT consultant, and we always had to read the contracts and, you know, the terms and conditions. We went through all the details, everything we ever did. To our credit, that's the way we run our lives as well. We add everything up. We want to know the liabilities. How much is it going to be? The beautiful thing was here, the tax accountant that we saw, A, spoke perfect English. B, the time we spent with him was free. We had a slight fire drill when we arrived here, having sold our house in California, that there was no capital gains tax to pay in the US because it was our primary residence. We'd been there many years. And we're sitting in there suddenly realizing, hey, now we're in Spain and we just sold our house. You know, how are they going to view it? So we called the tax guy and he said, oh, come and see me and I'll lay it out for you. And he laid out, he said, there's no liability. The way Spain works, you're in Spain for less than 6 months of the first year. You don't pay tax in Spain for that year. It's only if you're there for 183 days or more.
Yes. Yes.
So this is the year 2023 when we'll be paying Spanish tax. So we had no capital gains or anything like that to worry about.
So I'd like to.
That was free as well.
You'll have to pass me his information, his contact information.
I will, and I'll see if maybe he'll come and help out with a podcast one day. You never know.
I would love that. I would love that because it's such an important topic.
It is understanding the finances when you're moving to another country is hugely. I see people who move to Mexico and they have no clue what, you know, oh, we don't pay tax.
They don't.
Things tend to catch up with you if you're, you know, so it's a good idea to go in informed.
Yes, that's informed. I don't like things to bite me in the ass, so to speak. You know, so I want to know what it is before I get into it.
Correct, correct. So we're now planning to make sure, you know, in our lives that our last check bounces one day when we both departed this planet.
So
we just need to plan and manage that all the way through, including when do we take Social Security and things like that. You know, here back to the expatriate American community here, one of the members of the community is the consul in Fuengirola of the American Embassy. So there's a consulate in Fuengirola. And we know the consul, Bobby. She's really helpful. Wow. Somebody put out something on the little chat group. I've got questions about how I get my Social Security. She chimes in and says, here's the embassy number. Here's how you do it. This is what you need. It's really helpful. People helping people. Americans helping America.
That's great. Oh, I love it. Good stuff, Rich. Really good stuff. Tell us a little bit about the arts and culture in Torremolinos or surrounding areas.
Yeah. Well, I already mentioned Torremolinos has a certain amount of brutalist architecture, but it's not.
Yes.
You just have to take it for what it is. But really, there are little streets, lots of little cafes, little things. There's a Pablo Picasso, who is known to most people around the world. He emanated from this area, from Malaga and Torremolinos. So there's a big institute here as well in Torremolinos. So culture-wise, there are a lot of museums in Malaga. That's where we would go. There's museums for Picasso, history. You go see Roman stuff, Neolithic things. There are caves along the Mediterranean coast where some of the earliest evidence of civilization has been found, sort of cave art, things like that from tens of thousands of years ago, you know. So we're going to put that's all on our radar to go and explore at some point within not a long trip, even a day trip if you want, you have the most amazing palaces and gardens and museums. You know, everywhere we go, it takes our breath away. It's so beautiful. Cobbled streets, beautiful architecture. You know, whatever anybody says about Islamic or not, the Christian rulers, when the Reconquista happened, when the Christians in Spain threw the Islamists out, eventually in something like the 14th century, I think, they didn't change the style of architecture. They carried on building in the same style. And you learn all that history. It's layers upon layers upon layers of history. And you can see it. It breathes at you. It's fascinating. So we have several more trips. We have another trip to Seville planned in 2 or 3 weeks, primarily built around the fact that we've got tickets to one of the Cirque du Soleil shows in the Grand Chapeau. So we thought, well, let's go and plant ourselves over there for a few days. So there's like entertainment as well. There's theaters.
That's right. Do they have language in English? Or?
Yes. In Fuengirola, there's an English theater, the Salon Varieties. We went to see a show there, which was actually a British Christmas pantomime, which is not miming, a very loud thing where everybody screams in the audience, but it's kind of unique to England and very funny. But they put on other plays and shows and things. Then in Malaga, we went to a jazz festival where they had American jazz, and they're all speaking American on stage and what have you. We went to see Avatar 2 3D in the local movie theater.
English?
In English, yeah. So you just see VO, version original, when you look at the movie listings, and you pick that showing. So, you know, it was fine.
Awesome.
In terms of other culture, like live music and things, there's, you know, big stars come and play in venues around here. I think Robbie Williams is coming to Fuengirola. There'll be others around. We were stumbled across a music festival today, an American rockabilly music festival on the beach in just the other side of Torremolinos. We walked there in Carahuela. Our Spanish tutor told us about it. And that was great, basically. Yeah. Every bar here has live music. One of the bars that Americans circle around is a piano lounge called Billy's, which has only been open since roughly when we moved here. And Daniel and Sean from New York, they run Billy's, opened it up. It's American, and it's a piano bar. Wow. They get live singers and things. It's really very pleasant. So,
wow.
There's places to
go. You get me excited.
Good. It is. It's. I have to say, you know, when you get to towards retirement age, you do feel life start to narrow down a bit. It's, you know, you get set in your ways, get up at the same time, you do the same things. I remember my ancient relatives, they all did. And your life can go in two different directions. You can either let it narrow you down, and you know, there's nothing wrong with that. If that's what you want to do, watch your regular TV shows every evening, you take comfort from that sort of repetition of daily life.
Right.
Many people.
There's nothing wrong.
Nothing wrong with that. But for me, I always viewed that as, no, that's not the way we're going. We need to expand our horizons. We need breaths of fresh air, a little bit of excitement, and the unexpected. And that keeps the brain cells going. The learning another language.
It keeps you young.
It does. And learning another language, there is
that
no better
too.
Exercise for the brain than having to learn a different language. It stresses the brain, and it's which
agree.
Is good.
Yes, I agree. And the way I think of it is, I've worked all my life and I'm still working, but I devote my life to work. And now, and it is, you know, I've traveled somewhat. You know, between the U.S., I've been to Europe once many, many years ago. But now I feel like retirement is the time that I want to kind of catch up with life. And I want to, you know, whether it be just travel or living in a different place to expand my horizons and see what the next chapter is going to be. I think it's exciting.
It is. I mean, think of it like we've been here 5 months. We barely scratched the surface. There's an airport here where there are relatively inexpensive flights. Every airline in Europe, low-cost airline, all of them, fly to pretty much every city in Europe because everyone in Europe wants to come to this region for their vacations. So that puts us in reach of Oslo, Stockholm, Warsaw, Budapest. You know, there's daily flights to Istanbul. We can go anywhere. There's probably 15 flights a day to London, England, you know, things like that. So we're going over for the coronation.
Very inexpensive, too. So I know there are a lot of restaurants in the area. Are there like really good restaurants too?
Yes, there are indeed some higher end restaurants. In Torre Molinos, there are some steakhouses, which are very nice, just as you would find in the US. You have to learn the different terminology about how do I ask for my steak medium rare? And that sort of thing. But there's like different, they have helpful pictures with different color pictures of steaks so you can work it out. There's any one of the Spanish type restaurants, the Chiringuitos on the beach, they're all good. The food is generally very good. If you want a Michelin star restaurant, like really fine dining, which is probably not what I aim for as a rule, then you would have to go to somewhere like Seville or somewhere like that. And then you'll find several, you know, there are.
Malaga.
I have not really looked, but we've eaten in some very fine restaurants in Malaga, some fabulous food. And they're just all over the place. So they're everywhere. There's no shortage.
I'd even like to try those sardines that are cooked on the beach, like in those restaurants on the beach on the grill.
Sardinas. You see them advertised. We have not tried them yet. You see them advertised all along the beach, and it's relatively inexpensive. There's a skewer with some horizontally put skewered little, like, not minnows, but they're, I suppose most people, it's
they look
about
like it.
6 inches long.
Yeah.
5 or 6 of them skewered onto them. And then every little beach restaurant here has a, it looks like a rowing boat outside with a little roof over it, but it's actually metal. And in there is like a fire made with real wood. And it's like they grill the fish, the steaks, all grilled on that fire next to the restaurant. Each restaurant has their own. And it's really, when you walk down the beach in an afternoon, you'll smell the sort of wood smoke because they're here and there, you know, and the food is delicious.
I'm looking forward to it. Definitely a foodie, so I'd like to try a little bit of everything. And we talked a little bit about transportation. So we know that we have buses and we have trains. So getting around is not a problem at all. Is there traffic?
Yes, there will be traffic. Typically the cities, the streets are not as big as the American ones. So you'll feel it's narrower, you kind of like it feels a little bit more challenging to drive in town. But the freeways are world standard. They're very good. In the summer, they get quite busy, I believe. We've seen along the coastal highway, which is like an old style freeway, with the off ramps and the on ramps are like 50 yards long with a stop sign on them. So you can imagine a vehicle pulling out, accelerating, you know, you're not going to be doing more than 45, 50 miles an hour on that freeway.
Right.
There. It's old. Yeah. But there's traffic on that. We found it. But there's a, nearer the mountains that just back the towns to the coast is a, what's called an autopista, which is a toll freeway. And we've never used it we haven't felt the need, but it's there. And if you want to do that, it's a higher speed limit. You do 80 miles an hour, I think. And you pay the toll. But if we were driving to Cadiz or Seville or further afield, we probably would take that option and just factor in that cost because it'll just get around easily.
Right, gotcha. How about crime? Is there much crime? I know, you know, Spain doesn't have guns, so there's a gun law.
I have to say, that was one of the drivers that kind of like pushed us out of the US was we found ourselves feeling less and less comfortable. Not that we're both big guys. I mean, we're like, I'm 6'2 and my husband's 6'8. So we never feel particularly threatened. But let's just say that we found ourselves looking over our shoulders in the US. If we're sitting in a gay bar on a street, you know, what's going on around you, being situationally aware. There just don't seem to be any guns here to speak of. I think in Spain, to have a gun, you need a reason to have one, like a farming or you're doing some shooting practice or something. I don't think you go to pick up a handgun like you can in the US or anything like that. And anyway,
especially
crime-wise, I wander around with my cell phone in my back pocket of my jeans. If I'm in a crowd, I'll put it in the front pocket. But I've never felt an issue here. I looked to see what kind of crimes get reported in the local news press and so forth. Further down the coast is a community called Marbella, which is quite wealthy. That if you've got one of these sort of like super yachts or something.
It's like the Beverly Hills.
Yeah, it's like they have a marina there, and I believe the types of people you get there are more Russians and Arabs, and there's more crime there. That you see the occasional news, like a body was found or something down there. Mm-hmm. But here, nothing, and Malaga, nothing. It's like,
and I hear people, even, you know, females, girls, women, feel safe walking around because the culture is to, you know, have a late dinner and walk around, and they could walk around at 2 a.m. and not feel threatened.
So here, last night, we walked from our condo up into town. It's up a little bit of a hill, quite a narrow little road. It's not, you know, there's not many, it's not many houses on it. There's like a cliff one side and some condo doors on the other. And we left the house at 10:15 in the evening to go out to the bars, which stay open till 5, probably. They don't get busy until 10. So we were walking, and as we're walking up the hill, there's a little old lady in high heels, well-dressed, walking by herself up this hill like that. As we passed, we said, "Buenas noches," and she beamed a smile and said it straight back to us. So there's an example. If somebody like a local like that will wander out, it really is. It is very safe.
Yes. That's very comforting. That's, again, one of the things we're looking for as well. Great. So is there a big homeless population, do you know of?
Not seen any. I mean, we came from San Diego. My Lord, we have homeless in San Diego, and I was working in San Francisco. And again, yeah, you see everywhere. We haven't seen it here. There's one or two people you see on the beach that look like they're the sort of doing the magic tricks and things, and you think, yeah, I wonder where he sleeps, you know.
Right.
But it's one or two. You'll find that anywhere in the world, that sort of itinerant travelers,
right,
entertainers on the beach. But no, we've not seen any homeless anywhere other than that type of situation. Nothing. That doesn't mean to say it doesn't exist. I just haven't seen it.
Right. Haven't seen it. Well, if you haven't seen it, then that's a good sign too. Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about the healthcare situation. Coming over from the U.S. and getting a visa, do you need to purchase, I believe you need to purchase private insurance?
Yeah, anybody moving to Spain on any type of visa, even from Europeans, need to prove that they're not going to be a burden to the Spanish state. And part of that is having a matching, the same type of health plan that the Spanish have included in there by the government. You have to purchase private health insurance. And so we got health insurance. So in the US, we were paying for the two of us like $1,600 a month with Kaiser. And we were effectively freelance self-employed. So we had an LLC. So we took all of the costs. We had a $6,000 deductible, $12,000 maximum out of pocket. So we had to keep a lot of dollars on the side just to cover catastrophic, you know, what happens if you need surgery. That $6,000 will be done in a day's trip to the hospital.
Right.
Here, we had to declare our pre-existing conditions, and we have the typical age-related pre-existing conditions of some hypertension, hyperlipidemia, cholesterol, that type of stuff. Nothing much else. So And they did look at it, but they, I don't think they looked very hard at it. And now we pay for the whole year, I think it was like 1,300 euros each for the whole year. And for that, zero deductible, zero out of pocket, no copay, nothing. That 1,300 is all in. I suspect we have to pay something for the prescriptions, and I haven't got there yet, but I don't think, we spoke to some other Americans and they said they're trivially priced. It's like $5.
Very cheap. Yeah.
Now, because Charles is Irish and we're here living as Europeans, I will be as well when my residency comes through. After a year, we qualify for the Spanish system for free. But an American on one of the non-lucrative visas, I think you just have to keep buying the health
have
insurance.
Have to get the, yeah. Well, you need it for a year, as far as I understand.
Yeah.
At least. And then you'd become eligible for the public. But in my case, just personally, I'd probably want to keep both. Because there are advantages of going private, as far as getting the doctor that you want. Also getting an appointment quicker than the public.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you're right. And plus also the private health insurance covers us anywhere in the world anyway, on a vacation. Right. Not to live, but if we go for like 3 weeks vacation to Thailand or something, that health insurance will cover us there for visits to the ER and everything else.
So you said 1,300 each. So 2,600 for both, and that covers everything. Well, that's pretty good.
It covers, really good. And there's no deductible, nothing.
Right.
No copay.
Right. No copay, no deductible, which is excellent. All right. Do you have a hospital in vicinity in case something happens?
There are several. There's one within walking distance, funnily enough.
Wow.
But I noticed that the Americans who live nearby to us, they don't use that one so much because it's more Spanish-speaking. There is one in Benalmádena, which is the next town along, where a lot of Americans will go because they speak very good English there. So everybody does. And one of our American friends had some shoulder surgery on Friday, and he spoke very highly of everything. So
excellent. Excellent. So we talked a little bit about obtaining a visa. How about they still have a golden visa? Do you know anything about that?
I don't know a lot. I think there is a non-lucrative visa where you have to earn enough money, have enough to cover yourself. And there's like a value they put on that, something IPREM, I think. And you have to, I can't remember how much it is. It didn't look like it was a huge sum of money, you know, to me.
I think I get different answers, but I'm thinking maybe you have to prove, I'm thinking maybe 20 or 30,000 a year in it's assets and savings.
Exactly. Yeah.
And
then you need to add on for any family members. So if you go with your husband, you then add on another 7,000 or 8,000 per individual or something like that.
Right. Not the full amount.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Do you wish that you had anything in Torremolinos that you currently don't have that you've had somewhere else?
Yeah. There are differences. There's not a lot that we miss, but I do find the whole approach to drugstores, like where you have to go into a farmacia, and it's all feels like you're going into a doctor's clinic. It's like, you know, there's a counter there and nothing's available for you to touch and look at. So you have to go. I had a cough and a cold, so I went to the pharmacist. And if I was in the US, I'd have just strolled into CVS, Walgreens, and I'd have gone and looked at the Robitussins and all, and I'd have looked at the labels and, you know how it is. I've got my, maybe not Sudafed, but the replacement, the phenylephrine, I think it is. But, you get to pick and choose at will. Here, no. You access to that type of stuff is through the person in the white coat who stands there. You know, will you tell me what you're suffering from? And I will tell you what you can have. So,
wow. I would have to get used to that too.
You would. You do. I mean, it's like they're very helpful. It's not that they, you know, and I spoke some Spanish. People told me, don't go to that one because they don't speak enough English. And I said, oh, it's the run next door to where we live. I'm going to go and see what it is. And I was fine. It was okay. He asked me where my cough came from, whether it's in the head or the throat or the chest, those types of things. And I came away with some Robitussin equivalent stuff.
Right. Oh, my goodness.
But, you know, even just buying multivitamins and things, I do a one-a-day regime. Whether it does me any good, I have no idea. But I would go to Costco and get the bucket-sized Centrum.
Right.
You know, enough tab, enough there. Pills there for the whole year, you know, and it's probably a buy one, get one. But here it's no. I went into what looked like a vitamin store and I asked and they said, oh no, that's €50. I said, what? It's just vitamins. So we have Amazon.
And so you could order Amazon.
Yeah, I'll get them from Amazon. There's a British supermarket further down in Fuengirola where the Brits are more like the Americans in that respect. You can buy vitamins in the supermarket. You know, you don't have to go to a pharmacy.
To a pharmacy.
So they had the British equivalent of Centrum, and I bought that, you know.
But yeah.
I don't want to go there every day. And so it's
right. I hear you. Are there any cons that you would say of living there?
I haven't discovered yet, really. I think here's the thing, you know, coming from San Diego, it wasn't a big culture shock in terms of the speed of life. Southern California is pretty laid back anyway. I was never conscious of how slow we were. Like if I was lined up at the checkout, you know, you take your time in San Diego and you chat with the person running the register. My sister flying in from Manhattan would tell me, you know, hey, why is it moving so slow? I said, because
it's taking so slow.
You know, and the same's true here. It's like, you know, we're retired, so we have time.
Take your time.
Yeah. Let that
relax. You know,
rushing. I don't believe the stress levels are good for the body or the heart.
It's not.
So.
Excellent. Everything sounds so good. So in wrapping up, what would you say to the listening audience if they were looking to come to Spain and looking at Torremolinos like myself?
I, from my own experience, we love it here. We never thought we would. There are resorts in Spain which have bad reputations and full of Brits and things and, you know, the people who just get drunk on the beach all the time. This is not that here. This is more cultured. It's more civilized. I would say if you are planning on thinking of this area, do what we did, which is you don't have to commit. You can come out for a few weeks, 3 weeks or whatever. Take the smell test, you know, see what it's like, hang out, you know, visit the tax professionals, just see whether you like the look and feel and so forth. We were so pleasantly surprised a year ago that we found it a very comfortable experience. We enjoyed it. We saw some of the culture, just a little we went to Granada. We could see what was there.
Yeah.
It confirmed to us it was a good place to go. But we're not the kind of people we like to own property. We like to own where we live, but equally, we don't like to commit to that level of ownership on day one.
Especially when it's so new in a new country. There's no need.
New country, new area. You know, we don't know. Maybe there was a loud nightclub nearby we didn't know about.
Right.
You know, and we just never knew. And the reason they were selling was because they're just redeveloping it and building a bigger one. You don't know.
Right.
So we're renting.
So you get the lay of the land.
Yeah. And we rent for a year. No big deal. It's very comfortable. We'll find where in this year, we'll decide whether we want to stay, continue in the same place or slightly different or whatever, you know.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to hearing more from you in the future. And, you know, we're friends on Facebook, and I think my group, Where to Gaze Retire, kind of brought us together. and we kind of know the same people that you know in that area. So it makes things a little bit more cozy and friendly. So I want to thank you so much for this podcast and taking the time to speak to our audience, letting us know what it's like living in Torremolinos. It was just wonderful. It's a great experience. I feel like I'm selfish too, because I am the one that is very curious about that area as well. So again, thank you so much for being here and taking your time and taking the time.
Yeah, no, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for the opportunity to share. I mean, and also for the series of podcasts, because it's such a good vehicle for the research you can do up front to see different people's experiences around the world for real. Not secondhand.
Thank you.
Firsthand.
Right.
Priceless.
It's perfect. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Rich. And yeah, thank you. And we'll be definitely in touch.
Look forward to it.
Okay. Okay, same here. Take care.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Where Do Gays Retire podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe to our podcast and consider making a donation by clicking the coffee cup on any page at www.wheredogaysretire.com. Each cup of coffee that you buy costs $5 and goes towards helping us continue the podcast. Thank you for your continued support.